From the boardroom to the locker room, sport captures the imagination like little else. In this podcast, we talk to the men and women who make the big decisions and those who make the big plays to find out where sport is and, importantly, where it's going. But we do so through the only eyes that matter, those of the fan. Well, welcome everybody to another edition of Are You Not Entertained? Just the two of us this week, so I better welcome in the other half of that two, and that's my dear friend Roger Mitchell. Roger, come in, mate.
Hello, how are you, Grant? Good morning.
I'm exceptionally well in a sunny and nicely temperate England, I have to say. Roger, it's a delight to be back in when the weather's like this.
Yeah, England's green and pleasant lands.
Exactly right.
Absolutely true.
I'm down in the Garden of England, and it's in fine fettle, I have to say.
Kent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Well, mate.
This is goal on goal, isn't it?
This is goal on goal. I don't know about you, but I've got a few things to talk about.
I've got a few.
You will have too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, as always, I will do the decent thing and let you go first.
No, you go first.
You go first.
Yeah, you go
okay.
first.
Okay. My first goal is going to be F1. Last week, the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, and the chaos that went on, and more importantly, what a phenomenally great race it made it once Hamilton was relegated to last place after his unfortunate illegal pit stop. You know, we had a very strange situation where one of the cars crashed near the pit lane, and so they had to close the pit lane. Hamilton came round the bend, didn't see the sign that said the pit lane was closed, went in and pitted just because the safety car had come out, which was a smart thing to do, but realised that they'd have to have a penalty. They gave him a 10-second stop-start penalty, which meant he had to drive into the pit, stop for 10 seconds, then drive out again. So all in all, it cost him about 30 seconds. Put him to the back of the race by 30 seconds. He was 30 seconds behind the guy in front of him in penultimate place and had to fight his way back through the field. Now, there was never any chance that he was going to get back to the podium places or let alone win it because he just didn't have enough laps left. But on the one hand, you had a great race of him trying to muscle his way back through the field. And up front, you had two guys in Carlos Sainz and Pierre Gasly both fighting for their maiden Formula One win. And it went down to the last bend. It was gripping stuff. I mean, it really was fabulous to see Gasly win his first Grand Prix and how excited he got about it. And you know, it makes you realise, I guess, on the negative side, how kind of dull Formula One has become with Mercedes, whether it's Hamilton and Bottas winning just about every race.
It won't be Bottas,
will it? Then Verstappen. No, and if not them, then Verstappen. You know, it's basically that's it right now. And it does make you wonder what F1 should think about doing to try and level the playing field. I mean, that's what they try and do every year. But it was such a gripping race and so much fun to watch that I'm sure there must be people thinking, all right, this is what we need every week. I mean, it's great to see the dominance of Hamilton and what an incredible driver he is. But for the fans, for the neutral, who isn't just a rabid Hamilton / Mercedes fan, this was the best Grand Prix I've watched in a long, long time. Did you watch it, Roger?
I did, Grant. And
of course you did, the Italian Grand Prix. How could you not?
Yeah, there's a few things that, you know, to pick out of that, I would suggest. The first one, which I think we've said in the past, is I find the safety car thing dreadfully unfair. I know it makes it super exciting, but I'm not a big fan of Lewis Hamilton, but I did feel very sorry for him last Sunday. Not only because of exactly what you've described, but also I thought he was superb coming through the field again, whereas his teammate Bottas was insipid in the same car and didn't do anything. I think I think that was pretty terminal for Bottas, that race, for the reason I've just said. I think your point about Formula One in general and the potential, this is a story, you know, on this podcast we've been following for two or three years through, you know, Drive for Glory. And all of us knew Gasly's story because, you know, of that series, we knew that how he'd been treated by Red Bull and how he had to swallow that in front of, you know, millions of viewers. And I was super, super delighted to see him hold on to that. We knew Sainz for the same reason. I prefer the Gasly narrative, as they like to call it these days, because you know, because of the reason I just said. I also thought, you know, the way he was trying to zigzag to not allow Sainz to get into the get a slipstream going, I thought that was super interesting. Formula One, I think, is on the verge of being really, really exciting. And as you say, the problem is one that you shouldn't really complain about, which is the excellence of Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton. But you're right, Grant, when you see what can be done when things are a lot more even, it is super exciting, you know, and all the overtakings. And as I say, Hamilton was amazing. The utter tragedy, do we want to mention this again, of Ferrari in Italy?
Well, that's, I left that to you. I knew you'd have something to say about that.
Well, I mean, it's just, I just don't think that's acceptable. You know, I think watching the race, I was tweeting, you know, that famous Glasgow phrase, make sure you know the timetable for the last bus out of town, you know? You know, because like, man, that's Monza, and no. But it's not just the race. They're not even qualifying. They're not even getting to the last stages.
Yeah.
So, you know, something's going to happen with Ferrari. Sainz obviously is going to Ferrari, which is super interesting. That means they've got, as I've said before, two young, good-looking guys, which is going to work. I think they're both excellent drivers. They just need to get that team sorted out, and I think they need to do it.
Dustin Hoffman was an excellent driver in Rain Man, but he couldn't get into Ferrari. Maybe he could.
Maybe he could these days. Maybe he'd be chief engineer. But no, the point is absolutely correct. It was an amazing race, but don't lose the point. I think the safety car thing is something they need to get their head around, because whilst we all love the way that you described how the race went after it, we all love sport, to be fair. And poor Hamilton, I mean, you know, he'd done everything over the weekend, the qualifying, pole position. He's running away with it, and then, you know, That's not fair, and I think they need to address that, Grant.
Yeah, look, you're right. You're absolutely right. It's not fair, but unfortunately, he's not going to get much sympathy from the fans, because it just made the race so much more exciting. You know, I mean, it was genuinely thrilling stuff, right? Normally, you just kind of watch, and they'll go back and they'll show you, they'll follow a couple of cars for a few laps, and it's like, this is the battle for 8th and 9th, because we don't want to watch Hamilton. There's no point. You think about how much you see of Hamilton on the TV coverage.
Very little.
Nothing. You see him start, and every now and again he'll lap someone, you'll see him lapping someone, and then you see him at the finish. I mean, it's kind of pointless if you think about it. You know, we're there to see the race to win a Grand Prix, which is one of the most prestigious things you can do in all the sport. And we're relegated to watching something exciting back in 8th and 9th, and it's a shame. It's you know, it would be great to see it become ultra competitive again.
Well, you know, I do want to, and we always speak about Formula One, because I think it's a little bit of a poster child of everything that's the themes that we talk about and the sport industry talks about. You know, it's got a big company backer that wants to, you know, move it into the modern world. And I think you're starting to see the fruits of that. You know, I always look at my house, as everybody I think should do, to observe the children and see what they're consuming and how they get into things. And, you know, he liked the documentary. He's now downloaded a game that, you know, be a team manager, you know, and like, he's right into it. And it's a very complex game with, you know, data and tires and everything like that. He is a little bit of a petrol head himself, but he was never into Formula One. But the documentary did it, and you know, these games do it. And now, you know, he's the one updating me. He said, look, next year, you know, Racing Point, the whole story about Racing Point, and, you know, it's a dummy from Mercedes. You know, we talked about that, and everybody complaining about that. Next year, Racing Point is Aston Martin, Grant.
Yes.
And fucking Vettel is there, and, like, you know, Vettel's probably got some stuff to prove, you know. So that's going to be competitive, because Racing Point's competitive this year. And, you know, it's hats off to Liberty a little bit, because this wasn't where Formula One was 4 or 5 years ago. So Martin, I think, was incredibly loyal to Bernie, but it needed shaking up. And I think they're getting their act together, and, you know, with the new restrictions and the budget and everything like that, we may be about to see, you know, another golden age like the 70s, you know, where the cars were not so determinant and the racers were. I'm excited.
Yeah, look, I feel the same. I mean, I'm not so sure that we are going to get that. I certainly think it's become a much better product and a much more marketable and sellable product because of all the things you just pointed out. And for me, that's the one missing ingredient. How do we make sure that there are five guys that might win every week, you know, or six guys that might win every week? That's the one missing ingredient, just that little bit of tension. Because normally, you know, you get the news on Saturday that once again Hamilton's the fastest qualifier and pipping Bottas or pipping Verstappen, and you kind of know how it's going to go. And it really has been a case of does Hamilton have some kind of mechanical failure, tire failure, something? Is that what's going to cost him victory? Because otherwise, it's tough to beat him when he's out in front with an engine set up for clean air and away he goes, you know. But I hope you're right, Rog, because it would be great to see it back at to what it was in the 70s, which sadly you and I remember.
Yeah, and the sideburns and Graham Hill and Jackie Stewart. That was amazing times. Thinking back to that, it would be remiss of us to have a little section on Formula One and not remark the inevitable, sadly inevitable, passing of the Williams team.
Yes.
We did say about 6 months ago that the writing was on the wall. She wasn't controlling that team, and the father put her in a position she should never have been in. I think her pain has been taken away now, and I hope that's how she feels as well. And you know, she goes on to doing life, which she probably wants to do more than prolong her father's dream, which I think that's what she felt responsibility for. That's my view anyway.
Yeah, no, fair play. I would actually, just going back to the 70s, Rog, add that as a young, impressionable lad of, I don't know, 10, I guess, 9, 10, James Hunt used to drink in the pub down where my parents used to drink. And I saw him come into the car park once. He screamed into the car park, basically pulled the handbrake on, spun the car around, threw a gap in a brick wall that was about six inches longer than the car. Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. No. Apparently he was famous for doing it.
God,
I didn't know what I was saying.
That is one of the great sports films, Rush, you know?
Yeah, it's really, very good.
It's very, very good. And hats off to that actor whose name I can never remember. Thor.
It's the Aussie guy. Yeah, exactly. Chris Hemsworth. Yeah,
it was a great film.
One of the Hemsworth quadruplets.
Well, not the one who is kind of like cuckolded by Miley Cyrus. The other one. That's how I remember it. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
Oh, well, I see. I don't know about that, Roger. I don't read the gossip pages, unfortunately, but I'll take your word for it. So, well, what have you got for me, Roger?
Well, what I've got, I think we can't let this weekend pass without saying it's the start of the NFL, American football, and that would be my goal for this week. I think it's a really important season. What do you think?
The jury's out. I'm curious to see what it looks like without fans there, because if you think about it, if you think about the amount of razzmatazz and stuff that goes on at these NFL games, and it's such a stop-start sport, I've wondered about this for quite some time. What do you fill all those stops with, right? I mean, are you going to start pumping the music to the thing, have cheerleaders dance on the pitch to an empty stadium? I don't know. I've got a feeling it's going to feel very dystopian, and I'm a little nervous about it, I have to say. I mean, we've got the defending Super Bowl champs, the Chiefs, playing in the first game against the Texans, which is great because Patrick Mahomes is definitely one of the
ratings were low last night, Grant. The ratings were low. Well, you might not have seen
exactly
that.
And this is my point. This is what I'm worried about. I thought it was down 10% or something, right?
Yeah, it was. Well done. Yep.
So, you know, it I don't know. I think of all the sports, NFL is going to struggle the most, funnily enough, because of that. It's such a stop-start game. And if you think about the stats, I forget what they are, and I'm way off Facebook, but pulling numbers out of my head. But, you know, the amount of time the ball is in play in an NFL game is like 13 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I don't know. I mean, the jury's out for me, but I'm nervous for it, I've got to say.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Interestingly, I think this will prove the point about, you know, is it the on-game 13 minutes that people want, or is it the whole marketing of the backstory, which, you know, is one of our themes that, you know, you've got some interesting stories in NFL this year. You've obviously got Tom Brady going to Tampa.
Yep.
You know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think they're a great team. And, you know, he's putting a reputation on the line. We talked about that once before, but now it's happening. That will be an interesting, as you say, narrative to watch. I also saw this week, which, you know, I had my eye on because of the Jerry Cardinale interview. You know, his company, One Team, who represent the Players Association of the NFL, they've done a deal with the game Subway Surfers, which is one of the really popular mobile games. You know, six NFL stars are kind of like in cartoon form embedded into this game. And, you know, so everybody's trying to get NFL, I think, beyond that, you know, 13 minutes of high impact and everything like that, and get people to know their faces and their backstories and everything. So I think that's on the positive side. This will maybe make them do that more. But then I still think it's totally in the quagmire, mate, with all this politics stuff. You know, there was this Miami Dolphins video, you know, where they're saying we're not actually even going to come out because we don't want to be put in the position of kneeling, not kneeling. So tell you what, we're not on the field until the game starts. And they did a video on that. They got a lot of, you know, traction on social media. And you know, it's a sport that I think has got a very critical year coming up.
Yes, I agree with for sure. And as I say, I don't know. I'm more nervous for the NFL than I am for just about any other sport.
Yeah, and you know, one of the reasons for the ratings probably were those other sports, because, you know, I think we're in this phase now that they've got a name for it. They call it the sports equinox, where all the sports are being played at the same time, which very rarely happens, but obviously it is now. And I think, you know, LeBron was against the NFL, as was Serena Williams. I may be wrong, but, you know, the ratings weren't great. And, you know, I just think this plays into the theme, Grant, of, I think sports are now coming out of this phony war, as we called it the last episode, and feeling the cold reality of, oh shit, the fans aren't coming back. Second wave is coming. You know, you've seen it with the EPL. Richard Masters was quite vocal in saying, you know, even us, we can't survive this. Serie A, I mean, the comments coming out of there are dramatic. It's like, the fabric of the game and the society linked to the game is at severe risk if we don't get back into the stadia. So I think we're now entering this kind of like cold shower moment of, no, we ain't coming back soon. And that's just everything for sport, because, you know, I do think that they've, like everything, you know, the furlough system, this kind of like 2 or 3 months of, well, we'll get past it. I think people are realizing that it's going to be a good few months longer than that.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. It's it is kind of it's an uphill struggle for sport, I think, at the moment. I mean, the TV coverage of football, soccer, whatever you want to call it, has kind of been hit and miss for me. Some of the games, you've managed to forget that the crowd, that it's an empty stadium, and some of them it's been impossible to do that, and they just felt empty. I mean, one of my own goals for this week was these Nations League matches, which I want to get into, because I mean, that I don't understand why that's gone ahead. I really don't. It's just, it was ridiculous. I mean, I watched the two England games. Well, I watched one and a half of the England games, and they were just dreadful. You've got a bunch of players who aren't fit. For sure they're not fit. They're exhausted from the season finishing a few weeks ago. And they're playing what, let's face it, are meaningless games. This Nations League was created solely so that we didn't have friendlies.
Yep.
But you've got, you know, unlimited subs, it seems, and an empty stadium, total apathy, poor football, no excitement. That to me set football back rather than did anything to push it forward. And maybe that was just because England was so dire in both games.
No, the theme is correct.
You're right. It was just, the whole thing was just, I just sat there thinking, what are you doing? Give these guys a break. let him train to get fit, and either, you know, the guys who did it the best were the Champions League, having that set of one-off games in the same place to decide the Champions League worked brilliantly, I thought. You know, every one of those was exciting, tense, and you got a result, and you had this mini tournament. So why don't you do that with the Nations League if you want to do it, if you're desperate to have this thing, which clearly is just a cash cow for UEFA. But why they didn't just either knock it or shorten it, or yeah. I don't know, but it was, I was just appalled by it. I thought it was a terrible advert for football.
You know, because we had that laugh about that kind of like newspaper headline I had back in the day about Ken Dodd, you know?
The bunch of ditties.
The ditty team. This is one of my, hobby horses in sport. The lack of vision of, you see what's coming. You know, that article was 20 years ago where, you know, I was saying, this is going towards the clubs. There will be increased marginalisation of national, international football. That was a rant I had at the time about what they were still called then, friendlies. And nobody wanted to listen. And in fact, you know, I get ridiculed for that. You know, how dare you, the fabric of the game? Do you not love your country? This isn't all about money and big teams. And, you know, what about the people that support, you know, Scunthorpe? Are they, you know, watching England's really important for them, and you want to drive them towards watching Man United or whatever it is? Sometimes you got to see the tide coming and not be King Canute. And they never saw it coming, and now they are where they are. And I'll give you one more thing, which is always going to happen, but this isn't going to fly anymore. In one of those Nations League games, the Italian game, Zaniolo of Roma was injured, ACL again, cruciate, which is the second one to go in a year. And you know how bad they are. They are the worst you can get for a footballer. So he's coming back off the first one just a month ago in the middle of lockdown. Obviously, his recovery routine isn't in any way the way it would be normally. He gets thrown into that. Another crucial... And Roma now are thinking about suing UEFA. You know, all this is inevitable. But does anybody want to sit down and say, look, how do we balance international football and club football when we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of millions of investment for clubs now, and you take them away, you get their services for free, and you put on ditty internationals, just like you've said, and we're all meant to accept this? It's one of the great nonsenses about football that was there 20 years ago, and it's even more today.
Yeah, exactly right. So this you're risking career-ending injuries to these guys, you know, talented kids who in many cases aren't fully developed yet, right? They're still growing, they're still getting stronger.
Zaniolo is, yeah, it's the young man.
Yeah, and you risk ruining their careers over what? I mean, a meaningless fixture that nobody wants to play in, certainly nobody wants to go and watch, even if they could, probably. And this is just to fill the coffers of UEFA. I think it's the whole thing's is a farce.
Yeah. So listen, let me come on then to my own goal. And you know I like to always link it to the previous guests and everything that, you know, is the fil rouge of our, you know, entertained. Canelo Alvarez, DAZN, Joe Markovsky. I don't know whether you saw that story, Grant. Did you see that he's suing DAZN?
I didn't see that, no.
So, you know that he's their big box office. He was the boxer that they gave over a period of fights something close to $400 million as a guarantee. And they were going to then build their whole boxing offering around that. And DAZN, especially in the States, is really a boxing company at this point. So he is the cornerstone, the roof, the houses, the bricks, the door, everything. And, you know, they got two or three fights away with him and it did well. And he now has decided to sue DAZN and the promoter, which is, I think, Golden Boy De La Hoya, you know. He's suing them for amazing amounts of money, 200 million or something like that, because they haven't performed under lockdown in guaranteeing him the fights, the promotion that was in the contract. Big story. You know, I tried to reach out to Joe and very, very professionally says, not even off the record, I'm making no comment. But you know, this is dramatic because it affects what is one of the innovators in the broadcast world of sport, DAZN, and who knows where it's going to end up, Grant.
Yeah, look, what do you say to that, right? I mean, in today's climate, it doesn't surprise me. It's a big shame, obviously. I feel for Joe. I mean, that's an awful thing to happen. It seems frivolous. I suspect, even if to the letter, he's right in taking that sort of action, I think he's going to have a very tough time finding a judge who will rule that way. I think it'll be very tricky for him. I don't know that it's a smart public relations move in a sport that is still trying to find a fan base, grow a fan base, and
yeah,
you know, it's still in the process of kind of creating characters, if you like yeah, wrestling has done so successfully over the years. And so I don't think it's a smart move on his part at all. But sadly, in today's opportunistic culture, it doesn't really surprise me. I mean, someone was bound to sue somebody for something over this, even if it's not their fault. And so it'll be interesting to watch. You know, I don't know what to say. I think Joe's probably answered it correctly. I've got no comment on or off the record, because it's gonna open a can of worms for sure. What did you think when you saw it?
Yeah, same as you. The word opportunistic is a perfect one. But there's a lot of this stuff around. You may have seen the Premiership and the Chinese broadcaster Suning PPTV falling
yes.
out and
yep.
cancelling the saw contract. That. Yeah, I just think it's a real shame, because you know, DAZN has been a super innovator in the sports ecosystem, hugely risky and capital intensive business, focusing around boxing and around this person, this boxer in particular. And you would like to think that they would have an understanding of that, you know, that, you know, that the other person had really gone out on a limb to build a business around the persona of himself. And, you know, he's 30 and he's looking at the money, and, you know, the reasons he came out with it, they're all really, really spurious.
But it's not him, is it, Rog? It's not him. It's his agents.
Well,
it's not him at all. I just don't think it's him at all. This is like the footballers angling for moves. It's not them. It's the agents who want another payday, who you know, see
maybe
a chance that, you know, we could do this. I'd be amazed if this was actually him going to his lawyers and saying, "Hey guys, here's an idea." I just don't think the sports guys think like that. I think the agents either take a conversation and run with it, or GM up to do this stuff. It just never strikes me as people who, and you and I know, right? When you play sport, you're a sports person. It's the love of the game that comes first. It doesn't come from a place like this. I don't think. I mean, I may be being unusually optimistic.
I think boxing, I think prize fighting may be an exception. I don't know.
Maybe.
Really, you know, I think it's more about DAZN. You know, they obviously, as I said, have been hit a brick wall at the start of the lockdown. And, you know, they're now looking to fill that hole, talk about an IPO, talk about potentially being a target for a SPAC. They've made layoffs. It's quite sad, actually, because honestly, you know, whether you believe DAZN is the right model or it's got the right people, I'm quite fond of DAZN. You know, I know the old Perform people. We've had Joe on. I know two other people. And, you know, they're risk takers. And in an industry where people didn't want to take any risks, it was all minimum guarantees, money up front. It's a real shame. And that's definitely my own goal of the week.
Yep, I hear. Well, I've got. I'm going to stick with football for now for my last one, and that is again to this England Nations League stuff. But this is some off the pitch stuff. You know, you saw the story about the two young lads, Foden and Mason Greenwood, being sent home for violating the bubble with a couple of Icelandic young ladies. And now, it seemed to me like a total stitch up by the.
You thought that's how you read it?
It did. It seemed like a stitch up. It seemed like something. It seemed a bit fake shake to me. But what I wanted to talk about, I mean, it was a clear own goal by them. That's unequivocal. But look, they're young, Les, they're naive. I feel bad for them because, you know, they must be looking at thinking that their England careers may be in tatters.
Yeah, but beyond their England career, Foden's got a partner and a child, Grant.
Yeah, no. I don't want to talk about that because that's a pretty straightforward situation.
You think that's a honey trap, that one there?
It smacks of these girls.
Did you see
these
girls?
Had no idea who they were.
Did you see what they looked like? Did you see the picture of them?
I just saw like grainy footage of here we are at the hotel. They didn't really seem to know who these guys were. I don't know. Something about it to me smacked wrong. But what I want to talk about, Rog, was the way Gareth Southgate handled it, which I have to say I thought was excellent. You know, he was being G'd up to get into it and condemn them and get a juicy story out of it. And I thought he played it absolutely perfectly, you know, saying, look, these kids are getting a hard time. They've made a big mistake. You know, but I'm not going to build this up. They'll be punished. They'll have to take their medicine, but I'm not going to make this a story for you. And I thought for him in the role he's in with the kids concerned, I think that was exemplary man management. I thought he handled it absolutely superbly. So I was just very, very impressed with the way he just wouldn't bite. He just wouldn't give the story the oxygen that the British tabloids wanted to try and fuel it. And it seemed to have died down pretty quickly. Now, whether that was a factor of the Premier League starting again this weekend and they just got lucky that kind of knocked it off all the front and back pages, I don't know. But the story seemed to die down appropriately quickly. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you know, I've got maybe a slightly different take on that, Grant.
As I would expect and hope, frankly.
Yeah, listen, in terms of the way he handles the press in 2020, I think Gareth Southgate is exactly what 2020 would want from an English manager. I just want to go back a little bit to the management of football teams, which is really what he's paid for. Not to do press conferences. Why are those two boys rooming together? You know, in the old days, the choice of who roomed with who
was
a bit of an art. You know, the left back would room with the left winger so that they would get to know each other. The older player would room with the younger guy. You let these two young boys, I mean, like, that's where I think he's missed it. And you know, nobody seems to have asked about that. But why are these two on their debuts in a foreign place? If it was a stitch-up, to take your point, that would have been stopped.
Now, were they both? I'm not even sure. Were they roommates?
Well, the footage is them in the room together. You know, if you look at the transcript of what happened, he's in a room with Greenwood and he's speaking to the girls. And the girls, maybe to your point, are saying, well, you know, can we come over? You know what we're looking for. And he's, I think, relatively passive in all of that. And Greenwood's in the back, more proactively making it happen, as it seems from the transcript. So unless they got together in the room, they seem to be roommates, Grant.
Yeah, look, I mean, if that's the case, I agree with you 100%. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if they were roommates or maybe these days, Roger, they can all afford separate rooms.
Yeah.
Maybe just happen to be in one of the rooms. I don't know. But, you know, you're right. Back in the day, they did have roommates. Everyone was in pairs and they did, you know, put the old guys with the younger guys and that would certainly make sense. But who knows how that works today?
Yeah.
But you're right. I didn't see anyone talking about that. And if that is the case, then I agree with you 100%.
I don't know.
Which I never like doing, as you know.
Yeah, I just feel sorry for both of them because I think both of them are superb players. I particularly like Foden. We've talked about that before on here. And you know why I think the Foden thing is a little bit of a stitch-up? For a couple of reasons in his character, that if you look at them, he has been an exemplary pro in this period where he hasn't been given a lot of games. He's been patient. He's been told to learn his craft from Silva and Bernardo, and he's not made a stink anywhere. Equally, I don't know whether it means anything, but, you know, he became famous and he's still with the partner and the young child. So he doesn't strike me as somebody who's lost the head completely. And I really feel sorry because this will weigh on him. I don't think Man City will be pleased. And Southgate, as I'm sure behind the scenes, will not be pleased. I have to say, I do have a lot of sympathy for these situations in general. I always remember the story about one of the friends that I kicked around with that was quite close with. He grew up with Paolo Maldini and they were really close friends. And, you know, I heard from him that, you know, Maldini said, my life is hell. You know, like he would be at a dinner party with friends and their wives and teammates and their wives. And, you know, they were hitting on him in the kitchen type thing in the corridor. You know, like it can't, I don't think either of us have ever been in this position, Grant, but it can't be easy. You know, it can't be easy if, like, you know, you're targeted and you know you need to have the patience and the morals and the strength of a saint to not taste some of the sweeties that are out there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I agree. I feel bad for these young
not
kids,
for what you know, not for us to judge.
No, I agree, and it's look, they're faced with a set of problems that, you know, we can only imagine, and they're young kids who are bound to make mistakes, right? I mean, it's just, I don't know. I found the whole thing unfortunate, but as I say, I just thought Gareth Southgate, I thought, handled it very, very well in terms of just taking the teeth out of it and refusing to get drawn into it and just putting an arm around the lads and saying, look, they've screwed up. They know they've screwed up. It'll be dealt with. It's none of your business, basically, which I think is exactly the right way to handle it.
Mm. Yeah. I had a couple of other things in the same theme. If we want to discuss a little bit, Djokovic. I don't know what your view is on Djokovic. My initial reaction to all this kind of stuff is, I always like my sports heroes or sports stars to be a little bit fruity, a little bit. You know what I mean. So yeah. Like, my first reaction to that was, okay. She looks as if she's acting a wee bit. Frustration, he didn't aim it at her. And then I saw the whole tennis community, you know, as one, basically say it was a no-brainer. It was instant disqualification and he needs to really, really look at himself. And I was quite surprised at that, Grant. I mean, when you saw, what would your first reaction have been? Disqualify him or pragmatically try and blah, blah, blah?
Well, look, I saw it. It was clearly accidental, point one. There was no malice aforethought in that whatsoever. It was impetuous. He's got a history of doing that. It's not like this is out of character. So, what happened is completely understandable. The reaction to it, I guess, I look at that on two levels. One, it comes down to the rules, and it seemed as though the disqualification was pretty cut and dry based on the, you know, whatever it was, inappropriate conduct or whatever it is, right? It seems as though it's tough to argue how they could have bent the rules for him. I'm not saying it's clear that says if you hit a linesman with the ball, you're out, but it was sufficient that it's hard to see how they bent the rules for him. Having said that, had it been Federer, it might have been different, and that really comes back to how Djokovic is perceived. Now, obviously, he's at the vanguard of this attempt to set up a rival players' association, so he's not in the best books of the powers that be in the first place. So he certainly wasn't going to get any sympathy. So I don't know. There's definitely nuance to it. I think had it been Federer, there may have been a different outcome.
Well, that's so interesting.
Possibly. But, Rog, Federer wouldn't have done it. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, that's, but McEnroe would have done it, you know?
McEnroe would have got tossed. There's no doubt McEnroe would have got tossed for it. There's no doubt. Because that's his character, right? There's no way he could have been, with all his history of impetuous behaviour and screaming and shouting at umpires, if he'd have accidentally hit one, he'd have been out straight away. No doubt. No doubt in my mind at all.
Well, you know, my first reaction, I guess it's because I've been in that role, my first reaction was, geez, the sponsors and the broadcasters must be throwing up in the bathroom right now. You know, you lose your major draw on in a period where it's really tough already. And, you know, you have to go through this pantomime of saying, well, the rules must be adhered to. And you're saying, there go the ratings. There go all the engagement.
Yeah, no, you know? Obviously, yeah.
But, you know, the interesting thing, because we never want to really repeat what everybody else has said, but I think what you said is exactly the right insight. I'm not sure Federer would have been chucked, but did you see the reaction to it? You know, the what I call the, you know, the second iteration of the news cycle. You know, she, the woman, the name escapes me, Clark, I think it was, Sarah Clark. She was utterly abused on social media.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, like, some of it at the start, I found quite funny, because you know how I enjoy, even when it happens to me, I quite enjoy that whole, you know, like, social media getting a kicking. I just, it's, it kind of like tickles me. And like, she does a little work in promoting wine. And, you know, I came on to her, you fucking alcoholic and all this kind of stuff. I thought that was quite funny. But then they took it to a whole new level. You know, apparently her son died in a motorbike accident, and you know the Djokovic fans, the ultras, if you will, you know, you'll be joining him soon. Don't worry. I mean, that's dramatic, Grant. That's really dramatic.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, look. Unfortunately, the world we live in, you knew this poor woman was going to get battered for this, which is no fault of her own. I mean, it's so ludicrous, but it's just. We live in something of a toxic society, and toxic people in society have ready access to everybody now through social media. So, you know, Djokovic, to his credit, came out and condemned them and said, look, we need to support this poor woman. It wasn't her fault at all. Which, you know, what else can he do, right? Some people will criticize him for not going far enough, whatever. I mean, it's impossible. There's no answer. But, you know, the players, to a man, were you know, pretty much black and white, as you said.
Yeah, yeah.
Clear. It was interesting. You get insight into certain players, though. You know, Nick Kyrgios, his response was, well, if that had been me, I would have been banned for 5 months. You know, like the victim card getting played by him. I mean, that was totally in character. Yeah. You know, Becker was saying cut and dried. You know, Henman had his issues with accidentally hitting people.
Yeah.
So I think in terms of the outcome, there was as close to unanimity amongst players and officials as you could probably get, I would think, which tells me that the decision was right.
Yo, here's a curveball I want to throw you, because I think this is, nobody, I don't think, has covered this. Does sport have a Serbia problem? Does sport not like Serbia? Does society not like Serbia? And you know, I know that sounds like, oh, like Roger's like crazy. But, you know, if you go back all the way to Sinisa Mihajlovic, Lazio, Serbia, currently the manager of Bologna, he came out at a certain point and said, you know, very much that if he'd been another nationality, he would not have been given all the heat that he was given. I personally don't agree with that, because if you hang out with Arkan the Tiger, then you don't really have a lot of, like, you know, like you don't have a lot of way to go. But what I'm saying is, you know, I think there is an element of Serbia, you know, the Roma, the traveler community. The 90s, the war in Yugoslavia. I honestly think somewhere down there that there is a little issue with Serbia.
Yeah, it's the world anti-Serbite, as Seinfeld would no doubt call it. I don't know, Roger. I'd not
but
thought
it's an
of
interesting
it.
One, isn't it? It's an interesting.
Yeah, I'd not thought of it. I wish the referee in the World Cup semi-final last year had been a bit more anti-Croat, frankly, but we can't have that back again. But no, I don't know. I wouldn't even want to speculate on it. It seems unlikely to me that you could be against the whole country from a sporting perspective, given the various different organisations and stuff involved in arbitrating these things. But who knows? I will certainly now be watching all Serbs to see if they get a fair crack of the whip.
What else have you got for me? I forgot. I feel like you've got something else for me.
The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was a story with Yaya Toure, who is, in my mind, famous mostly for being one half of the greatest fan chant that's ever been done. Now, have you seen the Torres fan chant?
I don't think so.
Yaya and Colo.
No, I don't think so. I should, because he was at Celtic, but I don't.
Well, you know the old rave song, No.
Yeah.
So the fans will sing, and I'll find the video and post it of the fans in a London Underground station singing this, and they do the first verse is Yaya Torre. And the second verse is Colo Torre. And when they're singing Yaya, they're all the hands are up in the air. And when they're singing Colo, all the hands are down in the ground. And this goes on for like, it feels like about 10 minutes. And it is just so funny and so infectious. So that's why I've always loved
both the Torre. But what's he done now? Has he won another birthday present or something? What's he done?
He's not done anything of this sort. What he's done is send a message. He's part of the UNICEF soccer aid teams, the charity match for UNICEF, which I'm not sure when that is. It's pretty soon, I think. But supposedly in a group WhatsApp, he made some off-color joke, supposedly, about providing, as the sun covers it, sex workers for his soccer aid teammates. but what I wanted to bring up here, this is why I thought this was interesting, and it's the change in culture. Now, the sun, as you know, was very laddish, very, you know, all the jokes were very much, that would have been something that would have been, you know, for what a scorcher kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, the story in The Sun, and I've got it here, I'm going to read a couple of extracts from it. It talks about it sparked a string of complaints from his appalled teammates.
Appalled.
who included several female players as well as celebrities, right? So read the room, Yaya. But when you read this, now these are sort of inside quotes from people. Now, you know footballers better than I do, right, in terms of insight. Quotes like this, which say, to have one of the players, especially one who's supposed to be a professional, making such lewd and gross suggestions is despicable. Now, does this sound like a football insider to you?
No.
Okay. The next insider quote was, the messages turned the stomachs of the women along with the men.
No, they would never add along with the men. Never.
Right, okay. Hold on. He was then forced to apologise to everyone who received the messages and was warned his place in the squad was in jeopardy. However, feelings are running high during breakfast at the hotel, with many feeling he should get the boot. Right?
Well, hang on. Back up a minute. So he's in this charity team that includes men and women.
Yep.
And he is on a whatever WhatsApp group saying, yeah, I'll get some escorts around and we'll have a nice time. That's what he did.
No. Well, look, I don't know what's said, right? But supposedly what he's saying is, look, it was a joke about, you know, apparently there was a tweet showing a naked woman in a bath and him saying something about, he could get 19 women like this round to the team hotel or something. I don't know exactly what was said, right? No, but listen, but it's the insider take they've got this time, right? Saying an apology just won't cut it. There was no laughter. No one thought it was funny in the slightest, right? Now, what strikes me as interesting about this is the angle that The Sun have decided to take with this, right? Which 10 years ago is not the angle The Sun would have taken, I guarantee it.
Kelvin wouldn't have gone that way, no.
They just would not have gone that way. So The Sun is now, you know, has decided that, well, we need to condemn this, we need to say it's appalling, and our insiders, who sound like no football insiders that I've ever heard talk, all these quotes attributed to them are very much in keeping with the cultural atmosphere at the moment, where no one's allowed to make what they think is a funny joke and it just missed the mark. They can't say something and it not be funny, or be off-colour or be in bad taste.
Let's be fair to The Sun. It's not like, you love that phrase, had a joke and just missed the mark.
We haven't seen, hang on. We haven't seen what was written. I don't know what was written, right? I don't know what was written. Because they haven't shown us the text, which you would think the insider would take a screenshot and say, well, here's what he said. And it may be completely off. But my point is not what he said, not what happened. It's the approach The Sun have taken, which is so different to how they would have been a few years ago. it would have been, you know, very laddish, very whatever.
And I hear you, but I mean, honestly, that really is beyond the pale, Grant.
No, I don't disagree, Rog. I don't disagree. He is going to say, look, I thought it'd be funny. We don't know the language of the word. Rog, we don't know what was said, right? All we know is what this insider who's appalled and disgusted and, you know, everyone's stomach has turned and everyone, no one thought it was funny. I guarantee you some people thought it was funny. I guarantee you amongst a group of footballers, some of them thought it was funny. But I just thought it was fascinating to see how the Sun has now completely changed the way it covers this stuff. No, what was he thinking? Of course. What a complete tool. But the Sun, this is a Sun story like no other that I've ever read, I have to say.
Well, first of all, these charity games, these guys do this and they're not really up for it and okay, I'll do it. They give, I mean, that he takes it to another level and starts chatting with the teammates.
Yeah, right.
What was he thinking?
Well, he wasn't thinking, obviously.
Oh, my God. Look, Grant, that is a corker, but I'm going to call you and raise you on that.
Go on then.
I'm going to put...
This will be good.
I'm giving you three words. Odell Beckham Jr.
Oh, dear Lord. Okay.
You know about that story?
Yes, I saw as much of that as I could stomach and then turn it off.
Well, for the listeners, what happened was there was this radio show video with three delightful young ladies, very graphically, even for me, I couldn't repeat it, telling the other two about her evening with Odell.
Alleged evening with Odell.
It's on air. I mean, I don't need to say alleged because it's out there. Her video is there, whatever. By the way, he hasn't denied this really if you look at what's happened since.
I've tried to avoid it, thank you.
Right, so she basically says that his penchant for a romantic evening is what I'd like to call coprophilia. So most people might know what that is, but it's being defecated on.
Right. Listen, as a Fulham fan, I know all about that, metaphorically speaking.
So she very graphically was discussing on air with her two young colleagues his preferences, and that she, despite his request, was actually not able to do this. And Twitter, as you would imagine for such a star profile, went absolutely into overdrive, and you know, some of the stuff you really have to find very, very funny, Grant. Very, very funny. You know, but so what you have here is these three women, a little bit like Cardi B, you know, that Cardi B type rapper that unbelievably Joe Biden decided she was the right person to interview him.
Azalea Banks, was that Azalea Banks? No.
No. I think you're getting confused with Elon.
That's right.
Cardi B is, again, extremely graphic. I'm talking like, you know, vile graphic about sex and then what you should do. And they talk in that kind of like ghetto way, gangster way. So this was the style. And they were talking about Odell Beckham. And I mean, like, his profile and his career will never recover from this, Grant. It will never recover from it. You know, some of the jokes.
I think you over/underestimate today's culture, Rog, sadly.
Well, no, I think it's the opposite. I think that this culture is about memes and profiles that stick, and, you know, coming back to some of the things that you may not know about, like, you know, Logan, when he made that mistake in the Japanese forest, the suicide forest, he nearly never recovered, and he knows that. So I think that the Gen Z culture is very much about, you know, you can do something, you don't come back. And, you know, the amazing thing is that he plays for the Cleveland Browns. And of course...
Yes, he does.
That was such... I have to say, go and look at this, and some of the wit and some of the imagination that is out there is unbelievable.
No, I'm sure. My thought when I first saw it was if you enjoy being shat on every week, you should just go and sign for the Jets. Because that's basically guaranteed, as far as I can figure out, as a Jets fan.
You know, and I'm sure, Grant, there's a lot of people listening and say, oh, look at those two. They believe anything they see on social media and like or in the papers. And this is a serious point that, you know, me maybe have touched on this in the past, but I joined the music industry when I was 29, 30. And those 4 years changed my view about what I thought were stories that were totally, totally unbelievable and maybe made me into the cynic that I am today. You know, I give you one example that isn't offensive, or at least it shouldn't be offensive. You know, we were in Rome and it's Italy, it's the eternal city, Dolce Vita. We'd been to a concert, been a good concert, we'd seen the artist, and then, you know, because of, you know, who we were and who we were around, you know, you would get restaurants to open up just for you. So we called this restaurant a famous one. And it was about 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, get the pasta boiling, get it on, we're coming, there's 25 of us. And of course, no problem, we get there and it's all ready, and the place is already pretty full, you know, it's not as if it's empty, it's like full. And so we're sitting around the table and, you know, I'm this young, relatively naive foreigner in the middle of these old Roman Byzantine seen it all type guys. And you see everybody coming in and everybody knows each other, kiss, 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 you know, hug, hug, all of that. And then at this point, this guy comes in and he again gets the welcome treatment from the whole table. Our table must have been about 10, from the whole table. And I say to the guy beside me, I say, who's that? He seems very, very popular. Guy like raises his eyes to me, says, that's the old lover of Pope Paul VI. And he said it relatively loud at our corner of the table. And I looked round at my colleagues as if, you know, like, and all of them are just shaking their head. You know, like nodding. And I said, well, hold on here. First of all, you're telling me that the Pope had intimate relations and wasn't celibate. Secondly, it was with a man. And thirdly, the guy that we've just seen was his boyfriend. Yeah. I said, you folk are out of your mind. And apparently it was true. I mean, like, apparently it was true. And the point I'm making, Grant, is that for the next 4 years and then the future years in sport as well, you hear certain things that you wouldn't believe, but often they are true. So I don't think there's anything, whether it's Yaya Toure sending around a picture of a girl in the bath doing whatever, or it's Odell, you know, enjoying whatever that was. I believe all that stuff.
It's called scatological entertainment, Rod.
I just think that is the spice of life. I believe all that, and I think it's so entertaining. Maybe that's sinful, but I think that's so entertaining.
Wait, you mean the story, not the actual act?
Oh, definitely not the act.
Just checking. The story.
We do all have our own little dark secrets, but I don't think I'm personally ready yet to put them on the
air. Yeah, listen, I don't think the world's ready for that. Frankly, well, listen. I hope you got one more for us, because we need something a little bit more upbeat than that. All I've got is Fulham getting thumped 3-0 by Arsenal.
Oh yeah,
today,
I watched that.
I got nothing.
Well, I watched that, but you know why I watched it? Because no thanks to you and Giles, I compiled the fantasy football.
Well, no one asked me. No one asked me to get involved.
Well, you know, you're meant to say, "Well, register. Have you registered? Here's who I think." And today I was under pressure to get a team in before the deadline. I've never played fantasy football in my life, Grant, I'll be honest. And kind of like, I don't know how you get points. So I just did it like, kind of like pin on the donkey type thing. Got pretty lucky, mate. I picked Willian. He got a lot of points for 3 assists. Picked Lacazette, who scored. And Kieran Tierney, who I was obviously going to pick as a Celtic man, got a clean sheet. So I think we got off to a good start. I also picked one of your boys, the boy at the back, who's his name Hector.
Michael Hector.
Yeah.
Virgil van Mike, as he's known by the fans.
Yeah, as my son said, a poor man's Van Dijk.
Virgil van Mike, the Fulham fans call him.
So we got off to a good start. So I watched the whole game, actually, more interested than normal because of this fantasy football thing, which is a comment in itself. Much more interested in the whole game because of...
Yeah.
But honestly, Fulham were dreadful, Grant. Dreadful.
But what do you really think, though?
No, but I mean, you know, I would tell you that the playoff game, I said it was a poor team. They're not going to get many goals. And...
That's my worry. They rely on Mitrovic way too much.
I don't think he started.
No, he didn't. I think he's still got this hamstring injury, so I don't think he...
I think you're going to struggle, mate. I have to be honest. I have to be honest.
I would love to thump my chest and tell you you're a fool who doesn't know what he's talking about, but sadly, I suspect you're right. But listen, the beauty of being a Fulham fan, Rog, is you go into most seasons feeling like this, and sometimes you get pleasantly surprised.
Well, I do have to say this, but you know, it was an Italian TV. I watched it, and they had some beautiful footage of the stadium beside the river with the new stand being built. And the Italian commentators were so complimentary about the cottage. You know, they did a little piece at the start about the history of the cottage and this new stand now. It was really, really well done. And I think you would have liked it.
Well, that Stevenage Road stand was built in 1905.
Yeah.
It's the oldest stand in the Football League.
It covered all that.
But it's a great place to... It's a great place to watch football, even if it is... the standard that Fulham play. So, you know, it's...
Right, so listen, you don't want to end up with the Cleveland Steamer. by the way, that's what it's called, apparently.
Yes, thanks for that.
I've got a couple of things that is going to get your blood boiling a little bit. Or maybe not.
That's what I need.
Right, okay. So the first one is the autumn rugby tests, what we're called... funnily enough, the autumn rugby tests are now going to be called the Eight Nations. And are going to be covered by Amazon. And the thing that I'm going to say to you is the commentary in the industry around that is that's a wonderful thing because it's perfect for Amazon for Black Friday and Christmas shopping.
Oh, Jesus.
That's how sport is now being financed.
Well, hang on. So now who are the eight teams? Because I haven't seen this. I presume the eight teams are home countries, maybe France. Is it going to be Northern and Southern Hemisphere?
I don't know. I didn't get past the Amazon Black Friday thing, mate. I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. But the point is sport and consumerism, there we go. It's been brought together beautifully. The second thing I've got, and I'm just bringing this up because I know you love them. Portnoy has been very vocal as football has been returning this week, and indeed soccer, heavily criticising, for example, Massachusetts School League that put out some kind of circular saying soccer that they play could not involve any tackles, any headers, no defensive walls, and no touching of the opponent. And he put a nice little comment on the top of that in his inimitable style. I think the headline was, "You pussies, I will never watch you again."
Well, yeah, I mean, look, what can you do? This is a cultural phenomenon. This is not a sport phenomenon. This is just more of this nanny state trying to make sure that nobody ever gets mildly hurt doing anything.
The point is, Portnoy, who is... in this nanny state, if you want to call it, in these financial markets, he is undoubtedly becoming the spokesman of a generation, Grant.
Well, a spokesman of a couple of generations, funnily enough, Rog, because you know, that comment is much more akin to yours and my generation, right, than you would think, the generation that he's habitually targeting, which is the younger generations who... you know, you would expect in many cases would fall in line behind that kind of thing. So that's very interesting because he's now going after our demographic, and more power to him, frankly, with comments like that.
Yep. Barstool goes from strength to strength, apparently. But anyway,
apparently so.
He lost a lot of money, so you'll be happy at that, I guess.
No, not at all. I don't care if he makes money or not. It doesn't bother me. What I care about is other people who lose money because of him. That's what I'm far more animated about. But that's a story for a different podcast, Roger, I suspect.
It is. I think that brings us to a conclusion today, Grant.
I think that brings us to the conclusion. I mean, obviously, you and I never know where these conversations are going to go.
No.
And this one has gone in a wholly unexpected direction.
I love the Yaya Touré thing. I mean, I already loved it, the whole thing about, you know, being upset that he wasn't given a £200,000 Maserati birthday. Right. I thought that's just amazing.
Well, I'm going to send this chant to you, because I guarantee you, like me, you'll end up watching it for like 20 minutes. It's just fantastic.
Oh man.
Just pure delight. Anyway, well, look, that's it from us, I guess, for another week. Thank you everybody for listening. Apologies for anyone who might have been offended by anything. I promise we'll try not to talk about Fulham, because I understand it does. It's a very sensitive issue for many people. Do follow us on Twitter. You'll find us at entertainedr, A-R-E, the word. You can follow me, if you don't already, and you still wish to, at TTMYGH.
And you can follow myself at RPM Como, as in the lake.
As in the lake. Roger. Take care of yourself.
You take care as well.
I will talk to you next time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.